Amen. Today we are in 2 Samuel 13, and thank you, Haley, for sharing with us, because Haley said something that is so true. He said a lot of things that are true, but the one is that when you go through the Bible, it forces you to listen and look at all the stories that are in the Bible. There's really two ways to study the Bible, two main ways. There's a lot of ways to study, but two main ways. One is you take a topic and you go, I want to learn everything about such and such. And then you go to the Bible and find all the stories and all the Bible references on that topic. That's called a topical Bible study. We've all seen those, right? You want to learn about marriage, you go to the Bible, find all the stories. You want to learn about finance, you go to all the stories about finance. You want to learn about child rearing, you go to the stories and find out about child rearing and do that. The other way, the other main way of studying the Bible is, it's a big word, you don't have to remember, it's exegesis. Just forget the word, but it's going word by word, chapter by chapter, book by book, story by story. And when you do that, what that means is you can't skip anything. You see, topically, you can skip things. I just want to talk about the good parts. I don't want to talk about the bad parts, so I can create my topics that allow me just to talk about the parts I want to talk about. So I could come to you every Sunday, and the other ones that come up here, Jody and Cameron, Francois, and we could just give you topic after topic, and it would be great. And a lot of churches do that, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think somehow we miss the tough parts of the Bible. So today we're going to hit one of the toughest parts of the Bible in the entire Bible. It's not the toughest, but one of the toughest ones. It's in 2 Samuel 13, and so I'm going to give a disclaimer at the beginning, okay, so that those who are parents, it's a story about rape. It's a story of violation. It's a story of abuse. I am going to keep it at PG-13. I am not going to define certain words. You as adults know what those words mean, but I'm not going to also gloss over the story. So I'm going to say the story, but I'm not going to define the words. You with kids, and hopefully as you talk about it over lunch, you can interpret the story and some of the words in the story, parents, to the level of your children. Adults, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, because I'm not going to just kind of slide through this one and go to the next story. Is that okay? So that's what I'm doing with it. So I think most people will feel comfortable in terms of those who have children. Adults, you'll feel comfortable in the topic. It's not an easy topic, so none of us are going to feel comfortable in a while. So it's going to hit us all. So 2 Samuel chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. We'll start there, and then we'll move forward. Now Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And after a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her. Let me just stop there. Four people. It says now, and some of your translations say in the course of time. This is a new story. We've left the old story. We left the story of Bathsheba and the story of Nathan and the stories that we were talking about in the last couple of weeks. We're moving into a new set of stories, and it says now. We're not sure how many years have passed since the other story to this story, and the writer of 2 Samuel just always kind of puts the word in the course of time, or now such and such is going to happen. So it's a new story, same players, but we're adding some new players to it, same family. And so there's four people talked about here. Now Absalom, somewhat of a new player who becomes a major part of the balance of this book, David's son, so there's David, had a beautiful sister, that's Absalom had a beautiful sister, which makes this girl David's daughter, named Tamar, or Tamar, I'll call her Tamar. And after a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her. Now, is that confusing of who's who? So I need to give you some introduction to this so we get an understanding of this, because you know, my family, I have two daughters, three sons. It's easy to go son, daughter, sister, brother. It's easy. But in here, they're doing it, and you're going, who's who, and why are they doing it this way? Well, let me bring you some context. At this point, David had eight wives. Eight wives. Okay, you know of Bathsheba, and you know of Michael, and you know a few others. Abigail, but there's eight wives, and he had a lot of concubines, okay? And kids, you can ask your parents what a concubine is. So there's a group of concubines, eight wives, at least. Those are the named ones that we know about. At this point also, he has about 20 children who we know about. Now, there could be many more than the 20 children, but there are 20 children that are named or referenced to somewhere in the scripture that David was the father. So there's at least 20 kids. Solomon is not in the picture yet. Solomon is probably a young child at this point in time, so there's an older group. So David had been married many, many years. He's getting older in his life, so his children, he's got a group of children who are adults. We don't know if they're 18, 19, 20, or what age, but there's an adult group of children, and then there's a child group of children of his, and this is about the adult group of children. Now you go, how can this be? Well, think about it. He's the king. He had multiple houses. See, we think all these eight wives are here. She gets this suite. They get that suite. They get that suite. No, they were in different homes in different cities. Some lived in Hebron. Some lived in Bethlehem. Some lived in Jerusalem. And there were probably other houses around. And then there was a harem. And kids, you can ask your mom and dad what a harem is too. But there was a harem and at least eight houses that King David had that had each of his families. Now, the crown prince of all the sons at this point in time was Amnon, the one referred to here. He's the crown prince and probably the second son at this point in time. Remember, Solomon is going to become king, but at this point he's a child. Crown Prince Amnon, and probably second is Absalom. There may have been a son in between Amnon and Absalom. We're not sure, but Absalom is definitely in the line to be king, kind of second in line in that sense. It's interesting, too, we never think of this. Absalom's name is Shalom, Absalom, which means peace, man of peace. When we start hearing the story of Absalom this week and next week, you're going to realize that he did not live up to his name. He is not a man of peace. So you have all these people living, and Absalom had a sister named Tamar. They lived in a house. Amnon lived in another house. Now, here's what's important, and this is very non-Western. They didn't see each other. Now, maybe the guys saw each other once in a while, and maybe the girls saw each once in a while, but if you didn't live in a house, you did not see the person of the opposite sex in someone else's house. That is just a cultural thing. So even if they had a big family event like Passover, and all eight wives and all 20-some kids came, and all of them came, the girls were over here, and the guys were over here. So the guys knew each other, the girls knew each other, but the guys didn't know the girls, and the girls didn't know the guys. That's important to understand here because people think that this is a story of incest. Now, there is incest in the story, but it is not a story primarily about incest. It's not like this girl, Tamar, lived in the bedroom next door to Amnon, and he committed what he did in an incestuous way. He probably had never seen that girl. The other thing is we think that she was the crown princess. She was the number one girl of all the girls that David had. The way she dressed, the way she was separated, and things like that. So we have crown prince Amnon, crown princess. She wasn't really called a crown princess back there. I'm using modern words, but you get to know. The number one daughter was Tamar, the sister of Absalom. Now you go, can this really be? Let me share a story, a modern one, real quick. There's a guy who's a friend of this church who has preached here many, many times in the past. He's kind of retired now. He started Student Leadership University out in Orlando. His name is Jay Strack. I don't know if you know him, but Jay is a great guy. About 10, 15 years ago, he was here all the time and helping us and doing things and working with the church. And then He's up there. His son-in-law is Brent Crow, who preached twice last year in the spring when Elizabeth and I were away. Great people. Jay tells a story that he's a doctor, not a medical doctor, but a doctor of leadership, actually, a PhD. And so he was in a hospital in Orlando not long ago. He's in a hospital in Orlando. He's like 60 years old now or whatever, so he might have been 50 at the time. He's there visiting a friend, and on the intercom it said, would Dr. Strack come to the front reception area? So he goes, how do they even know I'm here? So somehow he figured his secretary called the hospital, couldn't get him or whatever. So he goes to the front desk of the hospital, a big regional hospital in Orlando, and he walks up, and as he's walking up, a man's walking up. They get to the lady at the desk, and both men simultaneously say, I'm Dr. Strack. Jay Strack, our friend, and another Strack named Gary Strack. He didn't know his name at the time. And they looked at each other, and he said, I'm Dr. Strack. And this guy said, I'm Dr. Strack. Well, this Dr. Strack was the administrator of the hospital, and he was going there, and that's who the lady wanted, was the administrator of the hospital who was running the hospital to, for some question, they don't know. So they dealt with the question. Jay stayed there, and the two Dr. Stracks, who were in their 50s at the time, were brothers and had never met each other. They had a father who had multiple families that no one knew about. Gary knew nothing about Jay's family. Jay knew nothing about Gary's family. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? And they're brothers, half-brothers, but now they're friends. And, you know, they didn't know each other growing up. They had no clue who each other was, but now are friends. This happens, and you go, how could this happen? It happened. And then, of course, back then, if we go back to 1000 B.C., the women wore very modest clothing and sometimes veils and coverings, so nothing is going on through the childhood of Amnon and Tamar. But let's keep reading. And Amnon loved Tamar, verse 2, and Amnon was so tormented that he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar, and again, it's his stepsister and living in another house, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. Didn't say for her, it said to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. So it was his cousin, and Jonadab was very crafty. He's a minor character here. You don't need to remember him, but there are always minor characters that help you sin. I just want you to know that. There are people that will help you sin. They will be glad to help you do what is wrong. And Jonadab is one of these. And Jonadab was very crafty. He said, O son of the king, why are you so haggard morning after morning? Will you not tell me? And Amnon said to him, I love Tamar, my brother's sister. He didn't say my sister. He said, my brother's sister. Jonadab said to him, lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, say to him, let my sister Tamar come and give me bread to eat and prepare the food in my sight that I may see it and eat it from her hand. They're planning. Remember the ands I talked about a few weeks ago? They're planning, and we're going to do this, and pretend you're sick, and talk to your father when he comes visits you, and say, I want to see Tamar, my sister, and I want her to prepare some foods. You see all the ands? And Jonadab is just making Amnon more lustful through this whole process. Please let my sister come and make cakes that I may eat from her hand. Verse 7. Then David sent home to Tamar saying, go to your brother Amnon's house. So he went to his father, talked about it. I skipped that verse, sorry. And Amnon said, Dad, probably didn't call him dad, O king. He was his dad. O king, would you send Tamar? Why Tamar? Because she's probably the crown princess. We know why Amnon wanted, but why would David send? Because she's the number one daughter. He's sending the number one daughter to this very ill person, so he thinks. So Tamar, verse 8, went to her brother Amnon's house where he was lying down, and she took bread and kneaded it, and dough rather, and made cakes in his sight and baked the cakes. This was a long time event. She just didn't come in and all this thing happened. I mean, this takes time to knead it, to make it happen. This is hour upon hour, and he's there with her. So he's burning inside for hours upon hours. And she took the pan and emptied it out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, "Send everyone from me." So everyone went out from him. Then Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food into the chamber that I may eat from your hand." And Tamar took the cakes. She had no idea what was going on. She had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. But when she brought them near him to eat, he took her and held her and said to her, "Come lie with me, my sister." She had a decision to make at that point. He presented her with an evil, sinful act, and she could respond to it. She answered, "No." Isn't that a great answer? I just got to stop there. Just sometimes, no is important. And can I just say, no is a complete sentence? No. No. Now, Jonadab and Amnon should have said no days before, but they didn't say no. They let it continue. They went with the "and" instead of the "no." "No, my brother, do not violate me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this outrageous thing." Now, he's the crown prince. She knows she can't overpower him. She knows he's stronger than he is. He's a warrior, for goodness sakes. She's not. So you need to realize that she had no power over him, so she invokes the power of the country. "You are the crown prince of this country, and it is not right to do it in this country. As for me, where could I carry my shame? And as for you, you would be as the one of the outrageous fools in Israel." I mean, she's just telling them like it is. "Now therefore," and this is interesting, "please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." She was willing to marry the man. She's willing to marry him. Interesting. Why? Because he's the crown prince. She could not be stopped if the king said, "You have to marry this man." Now, that wouldn't happen with the lesser sons, but she knows that the crown prince could go anywhere in the country and say, "I want that woman," or "I want that woman," and the king would make that woman become his wife. She knows it. So she's saying, let's make this legitimate. Let's make this honoring. But he would not listen to her. And being stronger than she, he violated her and lay with her. Being stronger than she, he overpowered her. He overpowered her. He violated her. Modern word, he abused her. This is R-rated stuff. He abused her. And then he lay with her. Some of your translations say he raped her, which is what he did. Rape is a modern word, by the way. Back then, they would have said he laid with her or he bedded her would be the more word that was used back then, but it's the word rape. He raped her totally against her will. Then Amnon hated her. Now this, you know, when you read this, in the past, I'd kind of just read through this chapter because I'm reading through the Bible. I just kind of move on. He hated her with very great hate. When did he hate her? He hated her immediately. And it says here, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. Is that amazing? The love that he supposedly had, which was not love at all, lost, hatred gained, and he hated her. Now, this all occurs while the door is closed. We know there is a door because there's a lock on it. The door is closed. They're in there alone. So we're talking about, what is this, 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half. I don't know how long it is, but all this has occurred, this abuse, this violation, this rape, and then this hatred all occurs in one sitting and in one setting. And Amnon said to her, "Get up and go." But she said, "No, my brother." Same response before. "For this is wrong in sending me away. You have now made me your wife. I'm going to be your wife." That's kind of the talk she's doing because that's what she was taught. "Sending me away is greater than the other that you just did to me." But he would not listen to her. He called the young man who had served him, who was probably a confidant, making sure nobody would listen to any of this. So he's out at the door. "Put this woman out of my presence and bolt the door after her." Now she was wearing a long robe with sleeves, for thus were the virgin daughters of the king dressed. So his servant put her out and bolted the door, and Tamar put ashes on her head and tore the long robe that she wore. I'll come back to that in a minute. And she laid her hand on her head and went away, crying aloud as she went. And her brother Absalom said to her, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? Now hold your peace." So he knew the situation. That's just more G-rated version of saying, "Did he violate you?" And there's no words here, so it's, you know, it's the shaking of the head. "Now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this to heart." So Tamar lived as a desolate woman in her brother Absalom's house. When King David heard of all these things, he was angry. Can I just say, though, we'll learn later, but he did nothing about it. He was angry, but did nothing about it. But Absalom spoke to Amnon neither good nor bad. In other words, he didn't say a word to his brother about this. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had violated his sister. That's the story. Let me give you the rest of the story very quickly. After 2 full years, Absalom had sheep shearers at Baalhazor, which is near Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's son to come join him. It was an event, kind of like a hunting event or a camping event, and he invites all the sons. So 8 houses, he invites them all. And he's going to come, and we're going to go separate over here, and we're going to have a weekend or a week-long celebration, and this is what's going to happen. And he invites King David along, his father. His father says no. And David says, "Just make sure Amnon is there as your representative." Now, why didn't he say, "Make sure so-and-so is there, and so-and-so is there, and so-and-so is there"? He just says, "Make sure Amnon is there." And that is not unusual because Amnon is the crown prince. So we want to make this a kingly event or a princely event in this sense. We want to make sure Amnon is there. But the king said to Absalom, verse 25, "No, my son, let us not all go. Let us not be burdensome to you." You know, this was going to cost a lot of money when you bring all these people together. Let us not. He pressed on. But he would not go, but gave his blessing to go. You know, David is becoming very out of the picture of all the events. He didn't want to be there. Now, can you imagine? All your sons are together for the first time in a long time of these 8 houses, and they're together. And David goes, "I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there with all my sons." Why? Because he hasn't dealt with the conflict and the issues of some of his sons, certainly Amnon. Then Absalom said, verse 26, "If not, please send Amnon." And the king said, "Why should he go?" And Absalom pressed on, and Amnon and all the king's sons went. Verse 26, "Then Absalom commanded his servants, 'Mark when Amnon's heart is merry with wine.'" He's drunk. "And when he is drunk, and when I say to you, 'Strike Amnon,' then kill him. Do not fear. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant." So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each mounted his mule and fled. Now, there's some humor in this. You got to see this. So Absalom has basically the guys who are serving kill Amnon. Got the picture? So there's all these sons. There's all the workers behind them, probably another group of 20 or 40 men, and they kill Amnon. All the other sons think they're next. They think this is a coup going on. So what do? They flee on mules. Now think about it. How fast does a mule go? They're fleeing on mules. I'd flee on a horse. I'd flee on a camel. I don't know that I'd flee on a mule. And the funny part is, we know it because, I won't read it now, you got to read the rest of the chapter. David hears about this before the sons get back to David. So the sons are working their way on these mules. Why? Because they have these flowing robes and they have all this stuff around, and these guys aren't really working anymore because they're the sons of the king. And so they're muling their way across. Somebody either runs past them or gets on a horse or a camel past them and goes and tells the king, all the sons are dead. All the sons are dead. There's been a coup and all the sons are dead, and Absalom did it. And then the king's grieving over the death of all these sons. And then there's this, you see the people coming and the dust, and who is that? And the mules are working their way all the way, and they realize, no, it's only Amnon who was killed. And Absalom flees. And I'm going to leave the story there because next week we're going to pick up the story of Absalom. Absalom flees from his brothers and his father. And the story of Absalom picks up. But I want to give us some thoughts here today of what we can learn. Can I do that for the last remaining moments? First of all, I said there's David, there's Absalom, Amnon, and Tamar. So let's just take them each. David. What do we learn about David in this story? Because if you have a Bible that titles it, the title says Tamar and Amnon. But this is really a story of all four. This is a story of David. So what do we learn about David? Three things I think we learn about David. Number one, we learn that David has lost his moral authority. David has lost his moral authority. We need to understand this. What occurred weeks ago, years ago, I can't tell you how long ago, when he did the Bathsheba thing and the killing of Uriah and all the other deceit and the abuse of power that I talked about, abuse of people and all the things I talked about before, David has lost his moral authority. See, there's authority. He didn't lose his authority. He was still king. He lost his ability to put a morality around that authority to do something good within his family and within his country. And we know that he didn't deal with Amnon when he should have dealt with Amnon. Amnon sinned, he did it wrong, and he didn't deal with it. And he lost because why did he lose his moral authority? Because he's still reeling over all the bad things he had done. Now, he had his restoration with God, created me a clean heart, O God, and restored to me the joy of your salvation. He did that. But he had not done anything with his family when it comes to moral authority. And we need to understand that. And I got to tell you that if you can have a leader, this is why Global Leadership Summit is so important. This is not a commercial. This is just a reality. The reality is this: leadership without morality is abuse. Leadership without morality is abuse. Because I want to use, and I'm not saying it has to be as bad as what Amnon did or what David did, but I want to use you. Leadership has to have a heart. It has to have the mind of Christ. Jay Strack, who was one of my early mentors in leadership, always says these words: leadership begins at the feet of Jesus. We need to understand that Jesus teaches us how to lead. The Bible teaches us how to lead. And when we throw that out and we just lead, we're leading with authority, but without moral authority, and David had lost that. Number two, and this is just a fact, David was a bad father. Oh, you can't say that. David was a bad father. Let me pause. Some of you have had bad fathers. Some of you have been bad fathers. Some of you are bad fathers. There is a result that occurs through bad fathering. You just have to know it, those of you who are listening as well. If you're a father, your role in your family is irreplaceable. And if you just sit on the sidelines of your family and let others run your family, whether it's good people running it, your wife, your kids, your uncle, a brother-in-law running your family, you are missing an opportunity to affect your family for good, because you have the moral responsibility to help your family. And he didn't do it. He should have, and we're going to see him later on. I mean, he didn't even come to an event with all his sons. I bet you if he was at that event, they wouldn't have killed Amnon. That's just me talking. You think Absalom's going to kill the crown prince in front of his father? I don't think so. Might have done it later, might have done it another way, but with his absence, bad things happened. And then finally, on David, David's inability to control his urges caused those things to be visited on his children. Now think about it. You have Amnon, who commits a violation of rape. What did David do? Didn't David do that too? Now, they didn't call it rape in David's case because he was the king, but it was the same thing. He took a woman against her will into that. Same thing. And then what does Absalom do? Absalom kills, but he doesn't. He lets his people kill, right? David kills, but he doesn't. He lets the people kill. Exact same thing. Even to the point that David got out of his bed to take the walk that started all this, right? He was lounging in his bed. It started in a bed, and here Amnon is in a sick bed, quote, sick bed. It's an amazing thing. The coalition or correlation between son Amnon, son Absalom, and their father's sin is so close, you don't even have to make it up. And we need to realize, fathers, you have an effect on your children. What you do and don't do has an incredible effect on your children. Women, you have an effect on your children. This is about a man in this case, but you have an incredible effect. Amnon, number two now, so that's David. Amnon and Absalom, we're going to talk about Absalom over the next few weeks because he's a player. But these guys turned evil. They were sinners. What they did is wrong. The Bible does not promote violation, rape, murder. It is wrong, and what they did is wrong, and they are chastised for it, actually punished in incredible ways for it as well. And you know, it's interesting, back to David for a minute with these guys. You remember in the story of Nathan, Nathan came and told David about the rich man and the poor man and that the rich man stole the poor man's sheep. And you remember what David said, as the Lord lives, this man should die. But before he dies, he should pay back the rich man four times. Do you remember that? I talked about this 2 weeks ago. Four times. Four of David's sons died. I just saw that this year. I'm not saying that's like coincidence or real, but four of David's sons in this storyline over the next few weeks. So these, Amnon dies. Of course, the child of the violation has already died. Absalom will die. I'll tell you ahead of time. He's going to die. We aren't there yet. And then another son whose name, is Adinadab or one of those, I can't pronounce it. He dies. Four sons die through this process. Kind of interesting. David almost predicted what happened as well. And then there's Tamar. Tamar was the victim. Remember last week I talked about punishment and consequences? Tamar suffered the consequences of the sins of Amnon, and they were multiple sins that occurred. And you can reread them and you can translate them to your children as much as you want. Here's what's interesting about this too. In our society, we have this thing called guilt and innocence. If I commit a crime, I'm guilty, but you're not guilty. I'm guilty, but you're not guilty. If I commit the crime, I'm the guilty one, you're not guilty. But in most cultures, there's a shame aspect to guilt, to a crime. There's shame. So when a crime is committed by me, my whole family is shamed. This whole church is shamed. This whole community, because I've been a part of this community, is shamed because of the sin I committed. That's a shame culture. This was a shame culture. You see, she did nothing wrong. She was innocent. He was guilty, but the shame spread like a dirty bomb on everyone. See, like guilt, innocence, it's like a rifle. It just goes to the guilty person. But shame covers everyone. This lady had been shamed. How do we know it? She's tearing her robe up. She's putting ashes on her head. She's screaming. She has been shamed. So what do we learn from this? Okay? From her shame. I want to go back to the robe. The robe. It says that the robe was long-sleeved. That's the English Standard Version. Some of your versions say that it was richly ornamented. And some of your versions say it was a coat of many colors. It's the same exact words used in Genesis chapter 37 when another young man who was beloved had a coat. You remember the coat? You even mentioned it. The coat of many colors. Same words. Joseph had a coat of many colors. Joseph was violated. And what happened? He went into slavery. What happened to the coat? Do you remember what happened to the coat? What happened to the coat? Blood was poured on it and it was split apart. They ripped it up as if a wild animal had killed Joseph. An incredible representation to the reality of what did happen to him, though he lived. Years later, in 2 Samuel 13, a coat described in the same Hebrew words as the coat of many colors is ripped by a woman who has been violated. David violated into slavery, this woman violated in her own personal reality, and she didn't put blood in it, although I bet there was blood there. She put ashes. Ashes represented death. Ash to ash represented death, and she ripped this incredibly gorgeous robe. That's how we know she was probably the crown princess, because this robe was richly ornamented. The robe of many colors in Genesis was an incredible robe. All the brothers wanted that same robe. It was so nice. This was an incredible robe ripped because of the sin of someone else. There's one more robe that is really mentioned in the Bible in terms of importance. And it's in John chapter 19. It's a purple robe. It's a scarlet robe. It's a robe Jesus wore. And remember, he's wearing this robe that he was given. And they take him to the cross. And he gets up on the cross. And they're going to split the robe in four parts. Right? Because there were four guards. So they're going to split this thing in four parts. And they go, no, this is such a beautiful robe, we're not going to split it. We're going to throw dice or lots, and one of us is going to get it all instead of all of us getting a fourth of it. So they cast lots, and one guy gets the gorgeous robe. It was not split apart. Why? I think in the representation of this, because Jesus was split apart for us. You see, the robe represented the agony of Joseph. The robe represented the agony of Tamar. The robe in Jesus' case did not represent the agony. Jesus was the agony for us. He is our representation. The robe is not our representation. The robe does not represent anything to you and me. It's Jesus who represents it. Because in his death, in his agony, we can have new life. And that is the beauty of this story. There's a restorative aspect of this story that can come out if you look at the big picture, the picture Haley was trying to tell us, that it is a whole picture of this. Now, as we close, I want you to bow your heads, and I'm going to keep talking to you, but I want your heads bowed and your eyes closed. Some of you have been abused, and you can use whatever word you want in there. Some of it could be verbal abuse, which occurred. Some could be physical abuse, which occurred in the story. Some could be sexual abuse, which occurred in the story. And there were several other kinds of abuse in there, treachery, deceit, other abuses that were all there. And some of you have experienced that in your life. And I don't want to pass by this story today without acknowledging that we need to stop and have a time of prayer over this. Stop. And my question to you, if you have experienced any of that, have you dealt with it? Have you worked through it? We're here to help. And this is not just women. There are men who have been abused. Boys, girls. We're here to help. And maybe there are things we can't help, and we can get you to some people who can give you help. But we need to acknowledge that this world is filled with sin and sinners, and there are consequences to people's sin that we are still carrying with us. And I don't just want us to walk and go, wow, what a story. Let's get on with it next week. And we will get on with it next week, but before we do, each of us need to take an account. And maybe you have stuffed it way back in the bottom drawer of your life. I'd just like to get it out and thrown away. And maybe there's someone here, by the way, and I'm not saying there is, but maybe there is, because there's a lot of people listening on the online as well. If you're the perpetrator of any of this kind of thing, you have got to stop. There is no maybe. There is no possibility here. There is no justification here. You've got to stop it. You're affecting the lives of people for the rest of their life. There's no easy way to end this service except to say this, that a group of us are going to be in the back. And I know some people said, well, no one's going to come to the back because if anybody comes and talks to us, we're going to think they're all been had problems in their life. Well, but if you don't come to us, how will we ever help? There'll be men and women back there, myself included, Elizabeth, Haley, all the others. We'll be back there. And if you'd like to pray, and even if you don't haven't had that, but just need to work through another issue, we're here to help. This is a difficult subject, and we would love to be a participant in your well-being and in your health, both physically and spiritually. Any need you have, just come to the back. We used to come to the front, but we can't with distancing, so we go to the back. If you get dismissed out a side door, just walk around to the front, to the lobby, and come right back into the lobby. They'll let you in, and just come to one of us.